taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. I hope you're having a wonderful 2022. You know, it's always interesting, the beginning of the year. Some people have very high expectations for the coming year. Some have very low. I know a lot of people were probably happy to see 2021 in the rearview mirror. And with all the New Year's resolutions, well, few days in, and I think most of us will find that 2022 is going to look an awful lot like 2021. Well, at least until we get a little further into the year and the political campaigns for the mid-year, the midterm elections start going around, then it'll just get crazier. But for now, we're dealing with the same COVID, the same woke, the same censorship that we pretty much were dealing with in 2021. And if there's one thing that kind of got my attention, it made me think. See, you've probably heard that Twitter has permanently suspended the account of Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. Now, my point here isn't what Twitter did. It isn't what the Representative Greene did. No, I actually want to back up a little bit because it got me thinking about, is information dangerous? And this idea of the need to be protected from certain information. And I come back to Article 1, Section 5, Clause 3 of the Constitution. In this clause, we find that Article 1 is, all, of course, all about Congress. And it says that each house shall keep a journal of its proceedings and from time to time publish the same, except such parts as may be in their judgment require secrecy. And secrecy is what I want to talk about today. It's what I'm thinking about today. Now, in secrecy, I understand there are times when secrecy is important. Sometimes it's trivial matters, right? I remember, you know, as a young man trying to keep a secret from my wife. No, nothing bad. Usually I was trying to surprise her with a gift. And I've only done it a couple times in our 30 plus years of marriage have I actually been able to surprise my wife with a gift. Took a lot of work. But though I'm thinking of other scenarios. There are issues of national security that we need to consider. But there are also this idea that secrecy and keeping information from the public, how far should it be allowed to go? I mean, if these are public entities, you talk about government as a public entity, well then, should the government be able to hide from its master what it's doing? So I want to take a look at a couple things that I found in the news recently. I'm going to start with a lawsuit that has been filed by the Informed Consent Action Network against the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Now, the suit has to do with data regarding the use of the COVID vaccines, the data that went into authorizing both the emergency use authorizations and the eventual authorization or licensure of Comirnaty-branded, quote-unquote, vaccine, and the data that's behind it. Now, in the lawsuit, this group, the Informed Consent Action Network, makes some very interesting points in their lead-up to the suit. They said, the government has been mandating millions of Americans inject a product for which they cannot hold the manufacturer liable if the product injures them. Well, that demands complete transparency. Well, I want to start off, I don't want to go too deep in that statement, but that protection from liability is actually void. It's a violation of the First Amendment of the Constitution because it denies people the right to petition a government for redress of grievance. But that's not what I'm focusing on here. It's this idea of transparency. They go on to say, especially when it comes to releasing data underlying the product's safety. See, that's been a lot of the issue with people who are not prepared to take these injections, is they're concerned about their safety. So this group, right, the Informed Consent Action Network, filed Freedom of Information or FOIA requests looking for the product safety data. Now, I mentioned this before, but you may not have heard. The FDA has said it's going to take them about 75 years to come up with the data. That's right. You're supposed to take this drug, this gene therapy, at least two or three of them are gene therapy, but you're not allowed to know if they're safe or not, because you can't hold the they don't want you holding the pharmaceutical companies accountable if there are problems with these drugs, and you're not allowed to know about their safety data because it's going to take them 75 years. 75 years, interesting, what's called de-identify. In other words, they don't want to give out people's private information, so they have to go through the data and make sure that they may identify certain demographic information about the person in the test. They don't want it to be specific enough to identify who the person is. For example, to say that, you know, I'm a white male that's somewhat overweight, well, that's fairly generic, but if you say I live in a specific town, in a specific county, in a specific region, on a specific street, well, you see, that gets a little too personal. But really, if they could come up with this data that quickly, it's going to take them 75 years to remove the personal information from it. But you see, that was only step one. See, apparently the problem is the way the data is collected, and this is what the FDA is claiming, is that the personal information's in there and they have to go through it meticulously to remove that information. Now, this is all the information that was provided before the EUAs were issued. This was called pre-licensure data. Now, they also talk about the post-licensure data. See, the according to both the FDA and the CDC, at least according to the lawsuit, they've said their primary existing safety monitoring system was incapable of determining causation and were otherwise unreliable. So the data for determining if these drugs were, it was iffy. But you see, the CDC's deployed a new safety monitoring system. Now, you may have heard of VAERS, right? The Vaccine Adverse Reaction Reporting System. I forget the exact acronym. We're not talking about that. At least I don't think so. CDC has a new thing called VSafe. And the interesting thing is the data within VSafe is already de-identified, meaning any data in VSafe doesn't have any personal or private information associated with it. Now, VSafe apparently is a smartphone app that allows you to, if you have taken this, to identify information or side effects of the vaccines, the quote-unquote vaccines. Now, this is interesting because the data that is submitted to VSafe is collected, managed, and housed on secure servers run by Oracle. Now, if you're in the IT industry, you know Oracle. In fact, if you're in many industries, you may be familiar with Oracle. Oracle is a large company, made its bones as a database company. So that's not surprising. And according to the lawsuit, that although CDC has access to the individualized survey data, Oracle can only access aggregate de-identified data for reporting. So while the data is housed on Oracle servers, apparently, at least according to this, Oracle doesn't have access to all the detailed data. As an IT person, I'll take that with a grain of salt. You see, I know how this type of database works. And I'm not 100% sure that people at Oracle couldn't get at the data if they really wanted to. But that's, again, not the point here. So this company, this group, the Informed Consent Action Network, submitted FOIA requests to produce the de-identified data from the VSafe program. In other words, the same data that Oracle already has access to, according to the CDC. Now, again, this is about transparency. This is about making an informed consent. If you are going to consent to taking an injection, you should be informed about, well, the pros and the cons, the benefits and the risks. And in fact, being that the Comirnaty brand, to my knowledge, Pfizer still is not released in the United States, all three of the current jabs are still emergency use authorized medications pharmaceuticals, which means they're required by the federal law that created the EUA concept to inform you of both the benefits and the risks. It's part of the FDA law. It's part of the law they used to approve this as an emergency use authorization. So all informed consent is saying, hey, give us the same data that Oracle has access to. It's already de-identified. It should be perfectly safe. Let us see it. Okay, well, apparently that hasn't gone so well. See, according to the complaint, the Action Network made a first request for all de-identified data submitted to vSafe since January 1st, 2020. That did not come through. So then it made a second request looking for all documents concerning the vSafe data, including policies, procedures, processes, communications, that type of stuff. They got some data, but none of the communications. Now, they sent in a third request to clarify any misunderstandings about the first request. They want all the data submitted to vSafe and subsequently de-identified from January 1st, 2020 forward. This is the same data they say Oracle has access to. This should not require any de-identification. It should not require any special work, but the CDC has refused to produce the documents. So I start with it's a very simple question. Who works for whom? Does the CDC work for the people of the United States? They should, but do they? Because it doesn't appear that they are doing so. It appears that they are claiming the authority to tell the American people what information they are and are not allowed. This goes beyond simply the emergency use authorization, the repeated recommendations for scientifically dubious suggestions about isolation, drugs, masks. Do they work in secret or do they work in public? Now, well, if I go all the way back to Constitution, each House of Congress can decide for themselves whether or not the journals of their proceedings require secrecy. That's, again, Article 1, Section 5 says each House gets to decide, they have to publish it, except what in their judgment requires secrecy. And I can see some logic to that, right? I can see situations where stuff going on in Congress may want to be held close to the vest. We're not talking Congress here. We're talking the CDC, an entity that legally shouldn't exist anyway. It's a violation of the Constitution, but we'll set that aside for the moment. Does government get to decide for itself what is and is not secret? Can government agencies, can government actors simply defy the law that says this information is free and open? Can these agencies, like the FDA, say, okay, we'll give you that data, but it's going to take so long, the data will be useless. What are you going to do in 75 years? If you took the vaccine and had some adverse reactions, or your children or grandchildren, and now it's 75 years later, and they, oh yeah, by the way, we didn't actually go through the testing quite properly. What are you going to do about it? It's too late then. Not to mention, I've talked other times about different FOIA requests where, as I understand it, most of the state FOIA requests allow the agency to recoup some of their nominal costs in producing the data. And I've seen that being abused. No, here we have what is a very simple and straightforward question. Can the government hide from the people the basis for their decisions? I agree. We don't want identifiable information, but we do want the de-identified information. We don't only deserve it. We demand it. And if government refuses to comply, what do we do? remember, the Declaration of Independence says that we have certain unalienable rights. Among them are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, if you're going to claim the authority to infringe on our liberty by telling us we must take some sort of pharmaceutical, well, first of all, legally, you can't. But if you're going to say that we reserve the right to tell you whether or not this stuff is safe, you have to prove it. Because certainly nobody at the CDC and the FDA, they have shown themselves to be untrustworthy. From the misreporting of deaths to the blatant lies about the effectiveness of these pharmaceuticals that keep changing over time, we don't trust them, and we shouldn't. They're our employees. They should produce this data. Now, why did I mention the Declaration of Independence? Because it's very simple. It says governments are created to secure our rights, and that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it. Now, this group, the Informed Consent Action Network, has taken the first step. They've petitioned for a redress of grievance. They have gone to the federal government in the form of the courts and said, hey, tell the federal government in the form of the CDC to turn over this data. We'll see what happens. It's still, the suit is still going on. And it may be something worth watching. But the very idea that government can hide the basis for these decisions should scare us. Because a government gets to decide what information you are and are not allowed to see, that gets to censor the information they make public, not because it's, again, private data. I'm not talking about releasing everybody's tax records, right? I'm talking about de-identified data. If government gets to decide what you can and cannot see, don't they get to establish what is and isn't truth? And if they get to decide, if something is safe simply because they say it's safe, are you safe? Now let's talk about the next little bit of transparency. We're still dealing with COVID, by the way. Now, you may have heard there's a lot of news that the FDA has approved an oral treatment for COVID-19, that it's supposed to do wonderful things to help, you know, reduce the chances of severe life-threatening effects of COVID. There's just one little problem. Apparently, this antiviral drug, it can cause severe or life-threatening side effects when used with certain common medications, some anticoagulants, some antidepressants, even some statins used for lowering cholesterol. This is according to the FDA. Now, let's face it. Every drug has potential side effects. It's the nature of the beast. You know, pretty much everything we consume, everything we do, has side effects, some more serious than others. But I guess here's my question. Why did the FDA issue an emergency use authorization for Pfizer's new drug a month after the federal government bought a bunch of it? You see, back in November, the Biden administration said they'd already purchased 10 million courses. They spent $5 billion to agree to buy these drugs that hadn't been approved yet. A month later, the FDA issued another emergency use authorization, meaning it hasn't gone through all the testing. It hasn't been through the long-term trials that any other pharmaceuticals required. But after the federal government decided to buy it, all of a sudden, oh yeah, we get this EUA and now we can sell it. I generally am not a conspiracy theorist, but I think we need some investigation about what's going on here. First of all, there is scientifically viable medical evidence that there are existing treatments for COVID-19. Again, this Paxlovid is designed for mild to moderate symptoms of COVID. we have treatments for that. I know we don't want to hear about it. Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine in combination with zinc. We have antivirals that can help treat this. We have the use of high-dose vitamin C and D3. All of these have had, well, let's just say, excellent track record in mitigating the symptoms of COVID-19, in stopping the replication of the virus. They've been available and used in humans for years, if not decades. They've been passed, they've been treated, and oh, by the way, they're inexpensive. But we're not allowed to talk about that. The CDC doesn't want anything to do with that. No, we have a new drug, a new experiment. So they want you to be the guinea pig for the pharmaceuticals, that the so-called vaccines, right, the gene therapy. Then they want you to be the guinea pig, and not to mention the actual J&J, I believe, is actually a vaccine. That's how I understand it. I may be wrong. But now they want you to be the guinea pig for a treatment for moderate to mild COVID. Again, this isn't a treatment for severe COVID. This isn't a treatment for people who are dying from COVID. These are the treatment for people who have mild symptoms to probably pretty uncomfortable symptoms. But if you're talking mild to moderate, are we really talking about people heading to the ICU? Why are we experimenting? Now, again, hey, if you want to try an experimental drug, that's your decision. I'm fully behind this idea that you should have a right to try pretty much any drug you want. But what are we seeing here? I look at this and maybe I'm jaded. Maybe after 2 years of being lied to about COVID, I just don't believe these people. When they say, oh yeah, it's perfectly safe. Of course, unless you have kidney disease or liver disease, you take certain medications. Well, they're telling us we can't use ivermectin. While I'm hearing reports of hospitals that are actually pulling it from their pharmacies so their doctors can't prescribe it. Of doctors being punished and let go for prescribing a medication that I believe won a Nobel Prize and has been used in humans for years and has been shown to be safe, in many cases effective against COVID. Yeah, I'm trying not to be a conspiracy theorist, but something doesn't smell right. Because so much of this is being done in the dark, behind closed doors, and simply expecting the American people to follow along and do what they're told. Yeah, there was a time in my life when that was me. I would simply follow along and do what I'm told, and I'm not that person anymore. No, I think if I come down with COVID, and it's a severe enough case that I need to really seek treatment, I don't think I'm going for Paxlovid. I don't know if it's effective or not. It's brand new. It's experimental. And if I'm to the point where my COVID is bad enough that I'm ready to try experimental drugs, that's not a moderate case of COVID. So I'm wondering, what else is the government hiding? Why did the government spend $5 billion on a treatment that wasn't approved yet? And why is it the government's doing all the buying? I mean, if this is a treatment, wouldn't this be covered by your insurance? Now, if you're on Medicaid and Medicare, maybe that's something else, but it makes me wonder. The sequence of things. What's going on behind closed doors? And should the American people be aware of it? Now, again, this is the Biden administration. I'm not complaining. The Trump administration did exactly the same thing. They spent money on vaccines that weren't approved yet. Then when later we found out, oh yeah, by the way, these aren't vaccines. These are gene therapy. So this isn't a partisan attack. This is the idea of letting the federal government act like it's the king. Letting them decide what you can and cannot use, what you can and cannot try. About taking over the medical industry. And it makes me wonder if we've made a terrible mistake in allowing the federal government to grow to the point where, well, they get to decide what treatment you can take, and they can do so without being open and transparent about the basis for which they are making those decisions. Now, I have to head off to break, but before I do, you know, 2022, like I said, we're starting in 2022, and well, maybe you made yourself some New Year's resolutions. Hopefully one of those resolutions was you're going to read the Constitution this year. I wholeheartedly behind that one. Maybe you decide you want to study or just want to learn more about that. Well, I'm doing an online Constitution study. You can find out more at constitutionstudy.com/study. It will be a Zoom call. We'll be doing it live. I'm still refining a couple of the dates. It will probably start later in this month, later in January. And I am giving away the Bill of Rights section. So when we cover the Bill of Rights, which is what most people are most interested in, you can find out absolutely free. You can pre-register, get involved. Again, that's constitutionstudy.com/study to find out more and to pre-register. Also, I want you to head over to healthycell.com/outloud. You know, we're talking about resolutions, and one of the common resolutions is, well, to live better, to eat healthier, to live a better lifestyle. Now, for you, that may mean taking some vitamins, and you may not like it, right? It's taking those pills, they're hard to swallow. Well, Healthy Cell has come up with a new technology, a travel-ready gel pack to get the vitamins you need, and they've got them in different formulas. For example, if you're like me, you get to the end of the day and you're having a hard time focusing. You're trying to get that last bit of stuff done and you just can't seem to focus. Well, Healthy Cell has an answer for that. It's called Focus and Recall. Now, you can try any of their products. You can get 20% off your first order because you're an America Out Loud listener. Just go to healthycell.com and use Out Loud at checkout to get that 20% discount. Try any of their formulas. But like I said, today I was talking about the Focus and Recall. Just make sure to use that code OUTLOUD to get 20% off your first order.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is McCullough Report. Are you tired of your tired vitamins? Consider Healthy Cell. These are pill-free vitamins that are in convenient gel packs. I like the Focus and Recall supplement. I use this a lot. You know, your brain uses a lot of energy and it depends on a variety of micronutrients and vitamins. Boost your short-term focus and long-term brain power with Healthy Cell's Focus and Recall vitamins. So go to healthycell.com, use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any Healthy Cell product. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cell's Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's healthycell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
liberty and the pursuit of 2022 is upon us. Happy New Year, my fellow Americans. It was Bill Vong who reminded us, an optimist stays up until midnight to see the new year in. A pessimist stays up to make sure the old year leaves. Here's to all being an optimist. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, and today we're talking about transparency. We're focusing primarily on a transparent government, a government that acts in light of day with the disinfectant of sunshine. We do recognize that there are times when secrets need to be kept, but in general, we want a government that is, well, open, forthright. In fact, I would actually give points to a politician who admits to have made a mistake, a bureaucrat that says, you know what, I was wrong, we've got new information, let's work from here. Sadly, that's rarely the case. For example, our good friends over at the CDC. Now, you may have noticed that the opinion of the CDC, the guidance coming out of the CDC, well, it seems to have been changing a little bit. See, they want to reduce the quarantine time, the time they say you need to be quarantined if you test positive for COVID, from 10 days to 5. Well, as long as that person continues to wear a mask. We'll ignore the EPA data about the effectiveness of masks. Of course, it also, they admit that now the majority of SARS-CoV-2 transmission occurs early in the course of the illness. So those longer quarantine times just aren't as important. But what does that say about what President Biden has been promoting? For example, Dr. Fauci, the chief medical advisor to the president, well, he cited that the societal and economic concerns seem to be the driving force behind the new guidance. Could it be that the people are finally having enough, and maybe those in government think their position isn't as strong as they once thought? Or could it be the consequences of testing and not putting things in context that's led to an overwhelming number of cases in which people are showing up to the hospital without having serious symptoms? To the point where in Vermont, I showed you an article, I talked about an article where they're finding people are doing, they're getting tested, and even though they're not sick, they're heading to the emergency room. Of course, there are medical experts that, they question the guidance coming out of the CDC, and I can't say that I necessarily blame them, not because I think the guidance is good or bad, but because the CDC has been so, well, on all sides of the case, on the situation. So, needless to say, faith in the CDC is, not at its strongest. But it brings up, again, we have interesting changes of situations, and just exactly what is the CDC using as the basis for their change of heart? Is it the societal and economic concerns that are bothering them, as opposed to the medical ones? The story came from the Washington Examiner, the one that I found. They talk about people that can transmit the virus a couple of days before they show symptoms. Yet I've seen studies that say, no, there's no evidence of asymptomatic transmission. See, when you've lost the confidence of the people you're supposed to advise, well, you really need to start showing your work, which is not what's happening. And the CDC is, and the FDA and Dr. Fauci, they've cried wolf so often, I doubt to trust any of them. I'm sure there are millions of Americans who do. I don't. I know Americans who trust everything they say, even when it seems to contradict something they said before. That's the need for transparency. I don't so much blame someone for coming to a new opinion when new evidence is available. It's this idea of we can't admit that we've made a mistake and we can't show our work that brings all of it into question. You see, when you have different groups of experts giving you contradicting advice, what do you do? It's kind of the trope that you see in some movie and TV programs, right? Where somebody is duplicated or impersonated and you can't tell the real person from the fake. And there's one of the protagonists trying to decide which of the two people to trust, relying only on their knowledge of the person and their ability to convince themselves this is the right person. Well, we don't have that level of knowledge. However, there is a way to know which one is true. It's to be transparent, to show the reports, to show the studies, to open them up to science. See, we've gotten this twisted idea that science is what certain people say it is. Science is a process. It's a verb, not a noun. It's something you do. You hypothesize, you test, you analyze, and then you modify the hypothesis. Part of the scientific process is opening up your tests to others to verify that it's so. Just because you say this happened, if it can't be duplicated, if it can't be replicated, how can it be trusted? Now, there are going to be people that disagree. I'm not saying we won't have those disagreements. But part of living in a free republic is having a government that doesn't act in secret because they think it's for our best interests. It's the government that is open that allows the people to see what they're doing is most likely to be trusted. So the fact that the CDC and the FDA and all these are not trusted, not really a surprise. But you see, the medical aspects aren't the only thing that we've dealt with for the last 2 years. This pandemic, this scaredemic, isn't simply a medical situation. It's a political one. And with politics comes money. Now, I love the way, I'm actually reading from Restoring America from the Washington Examiner. They have an article that starts out, months after Congress set aside hundreds of billions of dollars to help state and local governments fill budget holes created by the pandemic, some have used the money to fund a wide range of initiatives that arguably have little to do with the original intent of the relief. Now, again, I want to be open. I want the sunlight. Budget holes, government budget holes, were not the result of the pandemic of COVID. It was the pandemic of fear and overreaction, of shutting down cities and states with little medical evidence. Certainly after the first few weeks, there was little medical evidence that it was necessary, much less effective. But no, they did it anyway. And of course, when people aren't working, they're not making money. When they're not making money, well, bad things happen. And among other things is tax revenue goes down. Businesses are shut down. They can't pay taxes. People aren't working. They don't pay income taxes. So to fix a problem that the states made, guess what they did? They go to the federal government and say, give us money, because money is the balm that soothes all ills to those who work in government. Congress came up with a $350 billion American Rescue Plan, money given to state and local governments for pay off the mistakes that they had made. To pay off the bad, this is nothing but worse than paying off bad debts. State and local governments made horrendous mistakes in dealing with the virus and the supposed pandemic. The federal government picked up the tab. So they go, here we go. Here are billions of dollars for you, honest, upright, forthright state and local government officials to protect yourself, to pay off those bad debts. Here, you can use this. We gave you some guidelines. I mean, yeah, there's flexibility, but there were guidelines to spend the money to deal with relief of the problems. So how is some of this money spent? Well, let's see. The Texas legislature decided they would spend $3 billion of its money to cut checks to homeowners for property tax relief. Arizona Governor Doug Ducey, he put $163 million in the state government towards an education program that makes grants only to schools that pledge not to shut their doors or implement mask mandates for the rest of the school year. Austin, Texas, set aside $7.5 million of the relief funds on child care programs. Los Angeles spent $12.5 million to provide legal representation to immigrants and to give them financial assistance. Boston spent $8 million on a pilot program that provides free bus services, at least along certain city routes. They also, quote-unquote, invested money in a tourism program called All-Inclusive Boston. It's a public relations campaign that highlights how diverse Boston is. Some put the money into youth green jobs. Chicago sent $10 million for food equity programs and another $9 million for a relief fund for environmental justice. All of these were money that were taken from the American people, are printed in your name, and given to these cities because, well, they mismanaged an emergency. And surprise, surprise, we see that they're not well managing the money that they've been given. I believe it was Albert Einstein that said, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome, is the definition of insanity. Now, what does that say about your representatives in Congress that voted to spend this money? Money that they've done this over and over again. States mismanage their accounts. Federal government throws money at them. That money magically gets mismanaged even more. We do it over and over and over again, expecting a different outcome. Kind of like the way the American people keep voting for people based on their political party, their rhetoric, or just their campaign promises, and expect things to be different. Now, the thing about transparency is when you find transparency or whatever information you find, you have to recognize what it means. In other words, it doesn't do any good for a blind man to have a transparent window. You have to look and you have to analyze. So I found this article, and I found it on the Post-Millennial about what's going on in New York State. Now, I warned my audience, they got rid of Cuomo, but they simply brought another Marxist, tyrannical governor in his place. For example, reading from the Post-Millennial, in the light of the shortage of oral antibody and monoclonal antibody treatments in New York, the New York State Department of Health has issued new guidelines for health professionals to figure out how to ration the medication. Now, this is a common scenario when you have a socialized system. See, there are only a couple of ways to deal with a shortage. You can price it, or you can ration it. Pricing mechanism discourages people from whatever the rationed item, whatever the limited item is, based on whether or not they really need it. You know, think of it this way. If the price of a car is too high, you may make a decision that I don't need that new car. I can get away with a used one or the one they currently have. But the other is to ration and say, no matter what, you're only allowed to have so many. So being that New York is a dictatorial state that it is, the empire that it is, they've decided, no, we are going to ration this medication, but they're going to ration it based on, well, not based on need. You see, there's a logic to a rationing that says, you know what, the sickest people get it first, the ones most at risk get it first. No, that's not what the Department of Health plans. Now, some of these make sense, right? Age 12 and older, weighing at least 88 pounds, test positive for SARS-CoV-2. They might have mild to moderate symptoms. They're not hospitalized. They're able to be treated within 5 days of symptom onset. They have a medical condition or other factors that increase their risk factor. All of those, well, they kind of make sense, at least to me. But then I ran into this one. Non-white race or Hispanic Latino ethnicity should be considered a risk factor as long-standing systemic health and social inequities have contributed to an increased risk of severe illness and death from COVID-19. Now stop and think about that for just a moment. See, if someone is, well, not at risk or not at a higher risk, but they're non-white, they're Hispanic or Latino, well, they might get it over somebody who is white and meets those conditions. Because, again, they say that should be considered a risk factor because, well, it has been a problem in the past. Again, where's your evidence? Where's your proof? And if they are at higher risk, aren't they already at higher risk and maybe should be considered for these treatments? Again, these do have to be mild to moderate symptoms. We're not, you know, but you're telling me that if you have a group of people where all things are relatively equal, the Hispanic and the Black and the Latino, they get theirs first. Not because of any existing situation, but because of longstanding systemic inequities. This is in the state of New York. Meaning the very government that says, listen, we have to give them special treatment because they've had longstanding systemic health and social inequities in the state that has apparently caused these longstanding systemic health and social inequities. See, first, I want show me the data. Why does somebody if you take a dozen people, all meeting this criteria, age, positive test, mild symptoms, treatment within 5 days of onset, medical risk factors. That's all you've got. Why do I pick the racist decision? So that's the problem. I look at this, and what you see is a little bit of transparency. The transparency is New York State government's racist. The New York State Health Department wants to institute racist standards for treating this disease, this illness. They're not the only ones. They're not even the first out of the gate. But when we look at things transparently, I'm looking at saying, if all things else are equal and you make your decision based on race, well, that makes you a racist. I mean, here's my simple test. If you remove non-white and Hispanic, and you replace it with white, and people would have a conniption fit, well, then your position is racist. Now, again, I look at the saying, if I look at this, okay, who is the most at need here? I don't care what race they are. If you look at these symptoms, if you look at these standards, everything is based on a medical decision right up until the end when they have to throw in race as a reason. And that's actually being transparent. It's the recognition that the leadership in the New York State Health Department and probably in the leadership of the state, they're racist. They believe people should be treated differently based on the color of their skin. And that's something I thought we had gotten away from, or at least tried to. At least that's what the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King wanted, to not have his children judged based on the color of their skin. Nope. Apparently that they do want to be judged by the color of skin. They just want their color to get a benefit. And then the last example I want to use here, the last article I found, this I think falls under the category of, You know, sometimes better to keep your mouth shut and be thought a fool than open your mouth and prove it. No, I'm not talking about Ocasio-Cortez today. No, this comes out of the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS. So in preparing for the upcoming tax season, the IRS wanted to give some helpful information to people to make sure to help them fill out their income taxes properly. Okay, I got no problem with that. Well, here's some quotes from the IRS website. Quote, income from illegal activities such as money from dealing illegal drugs must be included on your income on Schedule 1, Section 1040, Line 8Z, or on Schedule C, Form 1040, if from your self-employment activities. So yeah, if you're employed selling illegal drugs, don't forget to take that income and put it on your tax returns. Oh, by the way, if you're a self-employed drug dealer, that goes on a different schedule. We want to make sure you get that right. They also said that you have to include, let me quote this. I got to quote this because you won't believe me. It says, if you steal property, you must report its fair market value in your income in the year you steal it, unless you return it to its rightful owner in the same year. No, this is not the Onion. This is not the Babylon Bee. This is the IRS's website. Other income, if you receive a bribe included in your income. Now listen, I think people should fill out their tax forms properly. I use an accountant to make sure my tax forms are submitted properly, that I don't pay any more than I have to, but I want all the I's dotted and T's crossed, but then again, I'm not a criminal. See, I'm trying to figure out why. I'm sure it's the law. I have no disagreements. It's the law. But does the IRS really expect people that are breaking the law to pass or to follow the IRS laws? I mean, you're telling me that someone's they're dealing drugs, but they're afraid of getting caught by the IRS. Do you really think that person that's say snatching packages off of doorsteps is going to report the fair market value of that property on their income? Just imagine that, filling out your 1040. Yeah, W-2, wages, tips. Oh yeah, ill-gotten gains, fair market value. Really? Now, part of me, I look at this and it just shows the absurdity of our tax system. It shows the absurdity of the IRS. But it's a perfect example to look at the state of things, to see the transparent nature that says the IRS spent time and money putting together regulations about where and how you report stolen income, illegal income. You see, laws don't stop people from doing things. And I honestly don't believe that anybody that wrote the code that said illegal income must be reported to the IRS actually expects criminals to report this to the IRS. This is an opportunity to run up the score, to maybe catch that criminal not in the act of the crime, but in not reporting their income to the IRS, which is maybe why so many people refer to it as the Infernal Revenue Service. And that's where this little piece of transparency well, it can be quite helpful to us. So it can help us look at the state of our government, maybe decide that it's time to start making some changes. To look at a government that, you know, okay, you didn't fill out your tax forms. Maybe we'll find that there are district attorneys or U.S. attorneys that are unwilling to prosecute certain crimes, but hey, we can get them on an IRS charge. Is that really what it's come down to? is the IRS not about funding the legitimate functions of the federal government, but simply about squeezing the rock to get as much blood out of it as possible? It's the reason why we want transparency, or at least the reason why I want transparency in governments. I want to know what they're doing in my name. I want to know how they're using the authority we've delegated to them. Because I want the opportunity to change things. I want the opportunity to look my representative in the eye and going, really, this is what you're spending your time and my hard-earned tax money on? I want to understand why we have all these bureaucracies that can't seem to make up their mind and giving us contradictory information without any background, that have released experimental drugs on us when it doesn't look like it was really needed, that spending billions and billions of dollars on, well, they tell us they need to spend it to deal with the problems from the pandemic, but really, much of it is being spent on, well, political glad-handing, political bribes, giving people stuff. Whether, you know, understand, looking at the stuff that the American Rescue Plan was spent on, a lot of it was spent on paying people off. I want a government that tells me, oh, okay, yes, I'm full of people who judge based on race. I want that out in the open. I don't want it hidden. I don't want it sheltered. I want it out in the open. Because when we see it, maybe eventually we'll do something about it. But until then, at least if we know what's going on, at least we can work to hold our elected officials accountable for their oath to support the Constitution. Because if we don't know what they're doing, how do we know if they're fulfilling their oath? And how do we know if they're a good employee if we never know what they do? So if sunlight is truly the best disinfectant, I think this would be a good time to make a resolution to help disinfect governments at all levels. Now, America Out Loud Talk Radio plays in the iHeartRadio network. You can listen 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from any web browser anywhere in the world. Also, stream or listen to the podcast on our apps for Apple, Android, or Alexa. And help us share the blessings of liberty with ourselves and our posterity.
You'll stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends every day.